When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Please note, season one of this podcast was recorded before the passing of our beloved Suzanne Summers. Suzanne, we love you. We miss you. And this podcast is dedicated to you.
We're two stepsisters bonded, living Hollywood lives. Even if one of us is watching for the very first time, all the good, the bad, the barky, take a peek inside. Let's rewatch and relive the good times. Keenan and they can give you deja vu.
Hi, this is Keenan and Lakin Give You Deja Vu, the rewatch podcast where we will take turns breaking down every episode of the 90s sitcom step by step in order. I'm Stacey Keenan and I played Dana Foster.
And I'm Christine Lakin and I played Al Lambert.
We're going to tell you how it really went down because we were there.
And for Stacey, this is a first watch podcast because you've never watched the episodes before.
Never.
Like, not in the 90s.
Not then, not now, not since.
Not in the aughts.
Never ever until in preparation for this podcast.
No DVDs, no streamings.
No DVDs, nothing.
Nothing.
That's right.
Did you read about them?
No.
Okay, so no reviews, nothing.
No. Nope.
This is just like, it's like the very first time. Baby
it's
bird eyes.
It's a whole new world.
Baby That's bird right. eyes.
So everybody, this week, we are still in season one. We are upon episode 3, entitled Rules of the House. So, our very first scene is the cold open. Now, in sitcoms of this day, perhaps even sitcoms today, I'm not even sure, you typically start the show with a cold open. Cold meaning the credits haven't rolled yet, it's just straight into the show, and it's a short and sweet little scene. And some of these cold opens are generic. In other words, they could go with any episode. So you could have, the writers could have some pre-written that they could stick on the front of any show. Others are going to be linked in to the rest of the story points of the show, so they're not interchangeable. Basically, we have the Lambert kids. And JT comes into the living room and he's all excited because he's basically saying the upside of living with Carol and her jerky kids is that there's always food in the fridge, which again is kind of begging the question, like, was DCFS about to come in
yes.
and take these children?
Yeah.
Are they hiding food in their bedrooms? What is going on?
We're just scarfing chips and guac like we've been starving for years and we need to somehow just start stowing away for winter.
Exactly. Yes, because that's why JT is so excited. There's always food in the fridge, namely this fabulous spread of this guacamole and chips. And they're all just, they all start chowing down and they're very excited about this.
I'm wearing a full-on yellow polo shirt, striped polo shirt, looks like it could have been from the men's section at the Gap.
Al gets a lot of cotton knits, a lot.
Yep. I did have a sort of like a double pony. It was like a low pony that went over one side of the shoulder, but had two yellow scrunchies on it.
It's a double scrunchie look, everybody.
Yeah. So, you know, I got something extra.
That's true. You got a little bit of glam for your for your trouble there. Now, JT's look is the 90s of 90s, 90s looks of all time. He has a black jean, a purple tee, with some kind of, you know, interest, some kind of little pattern at the neckline. Thank you. And then the sleeves are rolled up.
Oh, yeah.
The sleeves of the t-shirt. This is a t-shirt, remember, are rolled up. And of course, his legendary coif.
Right.
Of course.
We got to show off the guns.
That's right. So then Dana, played by me, the oldest of the foster children. We keep saying foster children. No, they're not in foster care. They are the the biological children of Carol. So Dana rolls in and says something horrible like, what are you animals eating? There's this theme of calling the Lambert children
feral animals,
insects, feral.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because our family has our shit together and the Lamberts do not.
Yeah.
So, you know, they inform Dana they're eating guacamole. And then Dana announces, that's not guacamole. That is Karen's avocado and cold cream facial.
And we're all like,
So the Lambert kids are grossed out and they just dump this food that they've been snarfing and disappear into the kitchen. And then Dana sits down, starts chomping on chips and says, sometimes it's just too easy. So Dana has outsmarted these idiots, managed to snake their guac out from under them. So that's our cold open. So that could go with any show. It's not tied in at all with the rest of the episode. You could stick that on any of these shows. But anyhow, from here, so then we go into our...
Wait, are we going to comment on what you're wearing? Were you just trying to skate over this?
Are we? Maybe.
I think we have to. I can't imagine that this is... I imagine this might be your least favorite outfit of all time. Only because I already know you're a person that does not care for jeans and you do not care for shorts. And this is a double whammy because you're wearing jean shorts.
It's a jean short, but not the jean short that you might be picturing. Not like a cutoff jean short.
No, it was like
this is a tailored
it's
jean
like a
short,
tailored
if
roll.
You will.
I feel like it was rolled on the bottom, maybe.
I don't remember that part, but it's definitely, and I watched the episode earlier today, but I don't recall whether it was rolled, but it was a tailored jean short with kind of a high waist and a tailored sort of flat front.
Yep.
Not your typical kind of low on the hip cutoff jean short whatsoever. With a, you know, patterned t-shirt. I mean, look, on the one hand, I thought it was just a very humdrum kind of outfit. But you're right. For me, a bit of a horror. Because, yes, I do not wear shorts. I really don't wear jeans.
I mean, I think you look adorable. Because you have a great figure and you have a little waist and it's all just like working. But I know you are probably like, I can't. No, don't even want to look at it. I'm going to pretend that it never happened.
Yeah.
But the other thing I love about it is that you're wearing the jean short, again, a scoop neck, blue, like flowered
scoop neck
t-shirt, pearls,
what the hell,
scrunchy white scrunchy socks, and white Keds.
Ooh,
it's all of it together that I have trouble with.
It's so 90s.
I almost wish you were wearing like a pleated, you know, khaki short. Like, that actually would make more sense to me with the rest of the ensemble.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. Yeah, I just, listen, I have a beefy thigh, okay? I have a strong thigh, and I just do not like showing them, especially in shorts. So it was a little rough. Like, when I made that entrance and I was watching this episode, I kind of did like a, I had a take. At seeing this look, because
well, it's the last time that we'll see this look, because I think after this episode, you were like, burn them. Mom, throw them out the window. Let's just pretend we don't know what happened to them. This will never happen again. And just wait, because later in the episode, we go full 180. So here we go.
Right. So kind of like in episode 2, we are definitely seeing the development of Dana's, you know, Chelsea Clinton, Prissy look, which this type of jean short and t-shirt thing just doesn't serve. It's very generic. It's not teaching the audience who the character is the way some of the later looks
do. Definitely.
Carol is sitting at the table, and it turns out that Frank and his kids are late for dinner. Half an hour late, to be exact, because Carol's whole idea here is that we sit down as a family, we eat dinner together, we don't just like, you know, pick some cold pizza out of the fridge and eat it on our way up the stairs. Like, we're going to sit down like a real family and eat, you know, nicely together. And the kids are annoyed because they've been sitting here looking at this food and not able to eat, not able to start, of course, because everyone else is not there. Carol is annoyed too, but she's making excuses for Frank and his passel of Lambert kids. Now, Carol is wearing, Suzanne Summers as Carol, a pink button front blouse. This is a blouse. Don't get it twisted. Yeah. This is not a shirt. It is not a top. It is a blouse.
It might have black buttons. Like, it's pink. It's like a light pink.
It is pink. It is buttoned up, and it has shoulder pads.
Yeah.
That are the size of Suzanne's entire body.
Yeah.
Like, they make her shoulders 5 times as wide as they actually are. They're the kind of shoulder pad that it doesn't just jut out, perhaps like your more 80s style, but they kind of wrap around the top and down the side so that you just get this massive, massive look. It was an eye opener. I did not remember the shoulder pad game being that strong.
Oh, me either.
In this time period. So I was kind of taken aback. But anywho, she has that blouse tucked in to a fetching black mini pencil skirt, a sheer black stocking, and a heel.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
she's been at work. She's been on her feet doing hair
all day.
All day,
ostensibly.
In that office outfit.
In that outfit with the heel. And then she comes home and doesn't like whip her bra off and immediately put on an UGG boot and a pajama pant and a t-shirt.
No.
Stockings are still suffocatingly on.
Yep.
The heels are wow.
Wow.
Wow. This lady is, I don't know what to say. Is she put together? Is she a maniac?
Like, it would make more sense to me. And I know this is probably just coming from like a total, you know, story point. But if Carol were a lawyer, if Carol were a pediatrician, if Carol were like a professor, or I don't, if she worked in an office building, I guess I could buy that she came home, like threw her jacket off and just like, you know, got the, she's doing hair next door. I don't understand why she's wearing what looks like 3/4 of a suit. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, partly it was the 90s. I feel like the clothes in the 90s made everyone look 20 years older than they were.
It's true.
So it would make sense that you're wearing office clothes, just like the kids at the dance in episode 2 were wearing clothes that,
blazers.
Yeah. No, seriously, blazers, just turtlenecks under blazers with a skirt. So maybe that's it. I mean, I guess
it's a sophisticated, we're trying to show that she's a sophisticated lady.
Yes, and she's very put together. And for this job, could she wear leggings and high tops and a big baggy button front shirt and a matching scrunchie? Yes, she totally could. But she can't because her character needs to be a contrast to Frank and the rest, right, of the Lamberts. She's polished and she's, yeah, perhaps a little uptight. That is the through line of the Fosters. We're all a little bit uptight, just we're various flavors of uptight.
Right.
So now Frank and his kids come in, and Frank seems confused. Like, what's going on here? Why aren't you all eating this very nice dinner? To which Carol, of course, points out, look, we eat together at 6:30 every night. You were supposed to be here for dinner at 6:30. And whoops, Frank totally forgot. And this is a real Frank type of move, as we've seen so far. I don't think his character is supposed to be inconsiderate. He can't be locked down to things like, you know, family dinner at 6:30. It just
never was a priority.
Right. He just kind of spaced on it.
And he says something like, oh, it looks good. And Dana says something like, we know, we've been looking at it for half an hour. And he's like, oh, that's weird. Most people would just say grace.
Yeah, that's what Frank says. Yeah. So then JT chimes in, because of course Carol wants them to all sit down and eat this nice dinner. And JT then reveals, they had chili burgers and pizza, but hey, he could still eat. And Carol is famished. Like, what?
Mortified.
Yes. Not only did you blow off our dinner, but you ate this, you know,
junk food,
disgusting food, instead of this beautiful, you know, salad and all these things. So Carol says, all right, let's sit down together as a family. Now, something that I really really noticed is that Carol is seated at the head of the table in this scene.
Yes.
And we will see in, now look, if you're shooting this scene, that's the only way it makes sense. But later, Frank is going to end up at the head of the table here. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, that really bugged me.
Really?
That seems very traditional. And I was, you know, I don't know. I was a feminist even then, but I was just like, this is Carol's house.
Right. That's where she always sat.
Yes. That he moved into. Why? So, because then it wasn't that Carol sat on the other end of the table, like traditional, the parents are at either end and then everyone else is on the side. She ended up on the side with the kids. Again, that was a necessity to shoot the scene. Otherwise, Carol's back would have been to the cameras. I get it.
But it just why couldn't they have switched back and forth even?
Sure. Yeah. You know? But I really noticed her sitting there at the head of the table because that just stops happening.
Right.
Later on in the show. So now the one Lambert who has not joined us yet is Al. Thus far, it is Frank and his oldest, which is JT, who's a teenager, the youngest, adorable little Brendan, who's about, I don't know, six. And then in comes Al, the middle child. Al comes in the back door of the kitchen with your favorite friend, Bullet the pig. Bullet looked like he was being a pain in the ass.
It was very stressful.
He looked like he was trying to get away. You were clearly feeding him something.
I literally have my hand under him, trying to feed him, trying to say my lines, trying to book it out of there. I want to get in. I want to get out.
Yeah. Bullet looked like he wanted to leap out of your arms.
There was nothing more stressful than waiting either backstage or up on the stairs to nowhere with that damn pig. I had no one to like help me. And then there, like, the light would be going off and I'd be like, here we go. And then the pig would start squirming and I'd be like,
squealing.
Ah!
He's doing his whole routine. Like, he is not a team player in this scene at all. And
you
can see it. Now, Carol, of course, is not happy. I mean, she's this sophisticated lady with her shoulder pads. The last thing she needs is a pig in her kitchen. So Carol says, sorry, no pigs at the table, which is a very tactful, you know, she doesn't say, get that thing out of here. Right. Are you nuts? She just kind of leans back in this very stiff way and goes, sorry, no pigs at the table. Dana snarkily chimes in with, well, in that case, to which Carol says, watch it, Dana, with the pointed mom finger, which I liked. So then Al just like lays it down. All right, well, if Bullet doesn't eat, then I don't eat. And Al just goes off upstairs.
Just takes the pig upstairs to the bedroom.
Just like, bye-bye. Okay. And then Brendan wants to eat in the living room because the game is on. And then Frank and JT just run out. They're like, oh yeah, the game. The Packers are playing. And then Carol is just left there like, oh my God.
He basically takes like a drumstick in his teeth and he's like, bye, love you.
Yeah. And it's like, what about our dinner? Like, what is happening here? So then Dana says, well, why don't we just put bowls on the floor with their names on them? See, again, they're animals is this theme. And Carol, we leave off with Carol not being happy. Now, our next scene, we are in Frank and Carol's bedroom, which, you know, I don't think I realized what a big part of the show was the bedroom scenes with Frank and Carol in bed.
So many scenes.
So here comes Frank. He's hopping into bed wearing teeny tiny little boxers.
So tiny, like smaller than the boxers I was wearing in the episode prior.
Yes. He would have fit into the ones that you were wearing.
Definitely.
But they are petite.
They are it's a fitted boxer. It's fitted. I feel like it could be tapered on the leg. It's definitely, and he has
a
blue tank top that's tucked into the boxer.
Yes. It is tucked in.
And he does this very funny thing where he like comes out of the bathroom and he kind of looks at his beautiful wife who's, you know, in bed in this like negligee, like satin,
butter yellow,
satin
slip dress style cleavage.
Yes.
Looks stunning.
And then he kind of looks down at his gut and he like does this like suck in thing, which I found very funny.
It was cute. Yeah. He does a little like whoop. Just tuck that in. So I hope you're sitting down, everybody, because guess what? Frank wants to have sex with Carol.
Yeah, shocking.
Shocker. But Carol is busy making a chart.
She's got her pens. She's got her Sharpies. She's got poster board.
She's got her super cute reading glasses on.
So cute. Tortoiseshell, round.
Adorable.
Love them.
So this is already a theme in this show. This is the second time where Frank rolls up into bed. He is looking to have sex. And yes. Carol is busy doing like homework, basically.
Yeah.
And Frank is left being like, can you stop working on your science project so we can...
So we can get it on. Thank you.
Yeah. So this time Carol is making a chart of the rules of the house. Okay. because she says, you know, we need to get organized. There need to be rules, because this whole episode that just happened earlier where with this fiasco at dinner, she doesn't want that anymore. She wants there to be some order in this house. So clearly she's going about that by organizing these charts. Now, Frank makes it clear he doesn't like rules. He doesn't like, you know, that kind of structure. And Carol says, well, you know, something to the effect of the rules are not just for the kids, you know, they're for us too. And then Carol is trying to get him on board. So she says, you know, there are benefits of some rules, like lights out at 10 o'clock. And then, you know, she's getting flirty with him and the lights go out.
And then he's like, ooh, I like that rule. And clearly it's on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's on at that
Never point. Have there been so many in a children's show. I mean, I'll keep saying this. So many innuendos when you're like, well, they're having sex now. Like, yeah, I feel like there were so many times where we're just like meant to envision the two of them being like, well, yes, they've gone off to do it. Great.
You know, it's so funny. There's a podcast that I love. It's called Hollywood Crime Scene. And the hosts of that show somehow started talking about Step by Step. And they said, I think it was Rachel, who's one of the hosts. I love them. But anyway, she said something like, that was such a horny show. And I listened to their podcast all the time and I was like, oh, I mean, first of all, I was very excited that they were talking about the show. But then when she said that, I was like, it is? It was? Because I don't think of it like that. I think of it as so wholesome and just such a family show. But I think she's right.
I know. She's definitely right.
I never noticed that about it.
Brandon, it was so funny. Brandon and I were kissing the other day. That's my husband, by the way. We were kissing the other day and Georgia walked in and it was almost like life imitating art. She was like, ugh, so much kissing, like that show.
Really?
She was talking about Step by Step.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, like the parents on that show. She's like, yeah, ew, you know. It was so funny. This is the other thing I love. Sorry, I just have to pause. So I've always said Step by Step and I love that Stacey always says Step by Step. Oh. It's we say it, we have like a different inflection for the way we say the show, but it has always struck me as hilarious that we say it two different ways.
I never noticed that.
Yeah.
So now we're into the next scene. We're in the kitchen and Penny is there with Grandma. So Penny is afraid that, you know, the meeting is about her just because she's around the house so much. And then Dana, as I said, comes into the kitchen to get Carol's pointer.
Yes, her pointer, which she keeps in a magical drawer under the island of the kitchen.
Yes, as you do. I mean, that's where you keep your pointer, right?
Of course.
Your metal, extendable, like old school TV antenna pointer.
TV antenna pointer.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too. I have a whole dedicated pointer drawer.
Of course.
But
well, you never know what you're going to need to point out for people in the kitchen.
Listen, you might be doing a presentation. Mm-hmm. You might be on a 50s game show.
Yep.
Yeah. Who knows?
Who knows?
So Dana trots in to get Carol's pointer and assures Aunt Penny that the family meeting is about the rules of the house, and Penny is relieved. Now, question for you. Has any real life family ever had a family meeting?
I mean, we would have family meetings, but they would be more like, you're in trouble, we need to talk. Like, it was more of, like, that was sort of the, I've never been like, okay, so tonight, 6 o'clock, family meeting.
Because,
no.
Right? I mean, the Brady Bunch used to do this.
Yeah.
Remember, there would be family meetings. And as a kid, now look, I was not around at the time that the Brady Bunch was on originally, but the reruns were on when I was a kid. And I watched all of them, probably. And they would have these family meetings. And I would sit there thinking, is that what families do? You know, because our family was very small. It was just my mom and my sister and me. But I thought, oh, well, maybe if you have like a real family with a dad and all these siblings and all this stuff, you're like a corporation or something. You have to have a meeting.
Yeah. Well, and I also think that this, if I'm remembering correctly, I feel like this was meant to be the second episode written. So
that makes sense.
It was really more about, once again, like, combining these families and how are we logistically going to do this?
How are we going to make this work? Yes, exactly. Yeah, it feels more like the pilot. So now Dana goes into the living room, hands over the pointer to Carol, and Carol is standing behind the couch giving a presentation to everyone else who's seated around the living room. She has these beautifully lettered charts that she has on an easel.
Yes.
And she discards one chart and there's another chart behind it. And they're so well lettered. I mean, I guess we're supposed to assume that Carol, being, you know, a perfectionist and stuff like that, that she has created these. But these are very clearly the work of a studio art department.
Yes.
Where they do professional sign making and lettering.
Yeah.
Someone probably did these by hand and they are freaking amazing.
Yeah, they're gorgeous.
They're beautiful. I'm like, wow, Carol is a talent. So Carol's got her charts and she starts laying out this very complex system for laundry.
Yeah.
And we find out a fact that I'm kind of in love with, as we're kind of perusing Carol's various charts about this very complex laundry system. The house has a laundry chute.
Yeah.
Ah, I'm so jealous.
A laundry chute.
I love that. Have you ever had a house with a laundry chute?
No, although my friend in high school had a house with a laundry chute.
Ah.
That and it would all just go straight down into a basket
in the laundry room. Yes.
So fun.
I learned something about that house that I never knew. It made me love it a little more. I don't think we ever allude to that fact ever again.
Nope.
But it was pretty amazing. Now, my great aunt did have a house in Pennsylvania that had a central vacuum.
Oh, like would you plug into the wall?
Yes. So you have that little port in the wall and you plug in your hose and then you can do that room. And then all of the stuff goes to one central place. Yeah.
My parents had that.
That's rad.
Yeah. They loved it.
I love that
idea. It's such a good idea, actually.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
Why did some of these good kind of like, you know, cutting edge advances of the, I don't know, 50s and 60s, why did some of them go away?
I don't know. Because it was really interesting. I was like, how often do you have to like empty that thing? It's huge. The tank that it would go into. My mom's like, I don't know. Once every 6 months, once a year.
Really?
Like, yeah.
Wow.
I know. It's like bizarre.
Very
and I
smart.
Always, I always remember her like sticking that thing in. I was going to be like, and they were like, you'd like would pop it out of the socket and be like, whoop. There was like a very like specific like whack sound to it.
It's very satisfying. It's a great idea. We need to bring those back. And then the other invention that we need, engineers out there, will you please facilitate this? We need an entirely stainless steel kitchen. And I mean like a restaurant kitchen, like even the ceiling is stainless. And then you seal it all up, you close the doors and you run it like a dishwasher. And all of the surfaces get blasted with boiling hot water and then steam dried and sanitized. So every surface in the entire kitchen gets cleaned, including
really
the ceiling, the walls, every countertop, every surface, and all of the cabinets. They close, you know, like, yep. In a way, of course, that nothing.
They like lock close.
Yes. Yeah. Inside would get wet. And then you have a completely sanitized kitchen on all surfaces whenever you want.
I love it.
So
that's so smart.
Now, I don't have any engineering skills. So will someone please design that?
We need it.
Put it in my house.
We need it. Thanks. Deja vu.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So I just want to pause here to talk about Carol's look.
Yeah.
Semi-dreams make me feel fine. I love this dress. I don't even know if those are the right words to that song, but I love this dress.
I would say the color is hot orange.
You know, I feel like your TV or your screen is adjusted slightly different.
Maybe.
Because some of your color descriptions are different than what I am seeing. I would call this a candy pink.
Oh, okay. I couldn't tell if it was pink or orange.
On my laptop. Yeah, it was reading candy pink. It has So let's just start at the beginning. This is a short-sleeved coat dress.
Coat dress again.
It's kind of this stewardess look or a uniform look where it's tailored. Love that word, tailored. And it has, you know, it has a collar. Now, yes, was the lapel on that collar a little wide for today? Yes, it was.
Right.
But the overall silhouette is stunning. It is tailored. And of course, this is Suzanne Somers as Carol. You cannot go wrong. Put that form-fitting dress on her. She looks incredible. It has a short sleeve. And then, most fun of all, so we said coat dress. What do you think the closure was? Buttons? Oh, no. A very cool black zipper.
Exposed black zipper.
Yes, that zips up the front, and then two black zipper pockets.
Zipper pockets.
I love it. Oh, and she's doing a nude stocking and heel. Because again, I think Carol sleeps in a nude stocking and heel.
She definitely does. Yeah.
I think underneath that stunning negligee that she has in the bed, she has a full control top pantyhose.
Yep.
With a nude heel underneath, like poor Carol.
Oh, it's a sand. God, yes. It's a sand leg.
Now, for those of you who were not around at that time, stockings were a thing.
Yes, they were.
The amount of money that I spent on stockings was shocking. Like there were a few times a year that I would go to Macy's and buy like 12 pairs of stockings.
Hose.
And they were not cheap.
No.
Yes, hose. In other words, all the way up to the waist. Not cheap at all. And in fact, they were so expensive and they were just worn so much that Macy's had a stocking deal. Like it was like one of those like punch card things almost.
Right.
Where if you bought 12 pairs, you got one free or something.
Right.
So imagine that, everyone. So people out there that are, I don't know, teenagers are in their 20s now where you've maybe put on a pair of stockings once in your entire life, like, if that.
Yeah.
This was to the point that, seriously, I would go and buy 12 at a time.
I can't remember the last time I wore a hose, a tight, or a stocking. I can't remember the last time.
Now, I'll do a tight in the winter. I like an opaque black tight because my legs get cold.
Yeah.
With like a black boot or something. Mm-hmm. But an actual sheer stocking, I can't remember. And you know, I'm a prosecutor now. I work for the LA DA's office. Previously, I worked for the Riverside DA's office. And when I first got there, people warned me about the stocking cop.
Stocking cop?
Now, listen, everybody, this was not in the 1990s, okay? I got there, I was a law clerk first, and then I was hired there in 2013. So, 2013. And yes, I was warned about the stocking cop, who apparently, now, I got very lucky, because I guess she had just retired right before I got there. But apparently, she used to patrol the hallways of the DA's office and pull over women who were not wearing stockings and essentially confront them and say, where are your stockings?
You mean like if they were wearing a dress or a skirt
with a bare leg.
A stocking with a bare leg.
Keep in mind, for our non-local listeners, Riverside is an inland county. It's known as the Inland Empire. It is freaking hot, brutally, brutally hot in the summer. I mean, basically year round, but in the summer, we would walk from our office to the courthouse, we being those of us in our office going to court. It was a solid block and a half walk, and it could be 115 degrees. And you're in a suit. You've got files with you. So you have one of these like rolling carts because they're too heavy for you to carry just with your hands. And yeah.
Is that like a rule that you have to be wearing stockings?
So, I mean, the way the training was... Listen, you just don't know who your jurors are going to be. And you might have a really good juror that you like and who you want to keep, but is an older man, let's say, who's very old school. And as it is, you're a lady lawyer in there. And, you know, so you should wear, and I swear this was the training, you really should wear skirt suits, not pants, and you should have a stocking and you should have a heel.
Because that is so, gender biased.
Because you should look
like a lady.
Yes, you should look kind of like a lady. So, and I did. I wore stockings for trials for the longest time because I was trying to follow that rule. It wasn't a rule. It was more of like this is what the best practice is.
Okay.
But then eventually I said, I'm not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Good for you.
I don't know how we got off on a stocking tangent.
Should we bring nude hoes back?
Look.
I'm now actually, like, I'm really thinking about it. Because her legs, Suzanne's legs, always looked amazing on camera.
Flawless, yeah.
Flawless.
It is good on camera because it creates a completely uniform.
Yeah.
You know, and back then, I believe it was Donna Karan she came out with what was called the nudes. And yes. They were the sheer stockings. I mean, you almost couldn't tell that you were wearing them. But yeah, it makes everything a nice uniform color. If you're pale and pasty, which Lakin does not know, she's like, not familiar. But for me, a constant problem, you can just throw them on and look, you know, have some color to your legs and not look like a corpse that escaped from, you know, the graveyard somewhere, which is how my legs always look. And yeah, it makes everything uniform. And then added benefit, you have that control top.
Right.
So if you want a little support
right.
In the tummy or whatever, it just...
So you're like your Spank.
Yeah, slurps everything in, you know, flattens it out.
I'm going to think about it, you know? Yeah. I'm going to think about bringing it back. I'll look like my legs came back from Barbados.
So now Carol is, you know, so she's laid out this very involved, very complex laundry system. The Lambert kids, they are bored. They're also mad about the imposition of all these rules. Carol lays out a time for breakfast, a time for dinner. And then Al says, great. And in between, we'll make license plates, which I thought was funny.
Yeah.
And then Frank gives Al a look, like not because he thinks that she's wrong, but just like, oh God, like don't piss her off. Okay. Like I need to get laid later. Yes, all right?
You are
like,
not helping me.
Do not mess with her.
Carol right now is also getting quite pointer happy. She's like slapping the pointer down. She like taps Mark on the head a little too hard with it. Then she like moves the pointer and almost decapitates Mark,
who is her boy.
And Chris Castile, who plays Mark, makes a very funny sort of like, ooh, like he grabs his neck and he's like, ooh.
Yeah. And he's like ducking to avoid this pointer. So we're having some sight gags with the pointer. Look, if you have a pointer, live it up.
You better be using it.
Yeah. Yeah. Do not waste that prop by any means. So now Carol is giving out tickets for TV time. Now you got to tell me what you thought of this. Now, Christine, you are a mom. Yes. Of young kids.
Yes.
Now, Carol announces, now remember, this is Carol being real uptight and just kind of ruining everyone's life with all these rules because she's trying to impose some order and organization. Each kid gets 6 hours of TV a week.
A week.
A week. I thought that sounded like so much. Did you think that?
No.
Really?
6 hours a week? I mean... You know, I would probably say I strive for no more than an hour a day.
Okay.
So, you know,
so
if you
in
think
the neighborhood,
it's like two shows, it's really not that, I guess it's not that much. And then, you know, so six actually is a sort of on the lesser side, because if you did an hour a day, then you have one day that's just like no TV at all.
No TV at all. Just hearing it, I thought, wow, I just felt like parents today watching that would be like, what? 6 hours a week? That's way too much. What are you talking about? And yet the reaction of the kids at the time is like horrified.
Horrified.
Because it's no TV time whatsoever.
I know.
And don't get me wrong. When I was a kid, I watched 8 hours of television a day. I am not kidding. A latchkey kid would come home from school, turn on the TV, do homework in front of the TV, eat in front of the TV, do everything in front of the TV. And my mom loved TV also.
Yeah.
She never said anything. She never said, you can't watch that.
Like I watched a lot of TV too.
So much. So much. I was addicted.
And also there was no like taping stuff when I was really little.
No.
So you were like, oh God, it's 4:30. I gotta turn the TV on for XYZ. And then you would just get sucked in and you'd end up watching, you know, until 6 and then take a break. Then you're back for the 7:30, 8 o'clock program, 9 o'clock program.
I feel like there was just a different attitude back then. I don't think parents were worried or stressed out about kids having, there wasn't even the term screen time.
No.
There was, the only screen there was TV. So, right. I mean, there was no screen time. It was just TV.
I think also with the, you know, with the advent of obviously other outlets like iPads and YouTube and, you know, gaming and all of that stuff there. And also the, I guess the commercialization of parenthood. Mm. There's more books written now than there ever were 20 years ago and more classes to tell you all the things you're doing wrong. I remember taking a class when I was just after Georgia was born and they were like, no screens for a year, not one. Do never put them in front of a screen, not even your phone, nothing. They should never see a television for at least, no, I think it was at least 2 years. And I was like, yeah, I've already started Sesame Street. But I was like, I have screwed this up. But I mean, it can be a slippery slope. So My kids love TV too. And I feel like I'm always taking it away from them. And I feel like it's going to backfire because eventually they're just going to, it's like candy. They're going to be older and they're going to be like, I never got this as an adult, as a kid. So now I'm just going.
So it becomes
full hog.
An obsession. I mean, yeah. I feel like it can go both ways. My mom never said enough TV or you can't watch TV that she just didn't. No rules with that. But I mean, to this day, I am fully addicted to television. And for years, I did not have functioning television in this house because I would just watch it. I would watch anything. I would watch it all day. It would be like being an alcoholic and having a bar in your living room.
Right.
So
right,
it can do that. But then right. on the other hand, I mean, my mom let us have Lucky Charms cereal and candy and all that stuff. And I just don't have a big relationship with that now.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that works.
That's interesting. These are our addictions, everyone. Thank you for bearing with us.
Thank you. So we get the tickets for TV time for the 6 hours a week that these kids are going to get. So now the Lambert kids are having a lot of attitude about all these rules and they're already pushing back. And the Foster kids, they don't like the Lambert kids' crappy attitude. Again, the Lamberts are animals. We keep going back to this theme. And then when Carol talks about time limits for each person to use the bathroom, Dana says, why do they even need the bathroom? Don't they just lick themselves clean? So again, this animal theme. So Carol is working her way through her multiple charts. Then she produces a chart that has the list of house rules. And then a big melee argument breaks out among the kids because Al has this really mean line for Mark. So Carol is trying to get the kids excited that, you know, if they have leftover TV tickets, in other words, if they haven't used up all their TV time, they'll get an extra for each ticket. They'll get an extra $2 a week added onto their allowance. And then, you know, Mark steps in and he's like, well, yes, I was able to invest in a very attractive, you know, mutual fund that yielded a very nice dividend and blah, blah, blah. And then Al just like a savage move. Walks over to him and she's like, you're boring.
And like, he's like, wow. I know.
And he just, it's so sad. I know. And he just sits down. It was super mean. But then Dana gets pissed. Dana being the big sister, seeing her poor little cute brother in his sweater vest. Again, we're teaching the audience who these characters are. He's got a sweater vest. He's got his khakis. He's got his button-down shirt underneath
the sweater
vest.
He's got like a glasses protector.
Yeah, he's got the glasses with the head thing. Dana steps in, you know, to stick up for Mark. And then, this big melee ensues. Frank breaks up the melee with the classic sitcom loud whistle, which of course Patrick Duffy knows how to do that whistle.
Of course.
I don't really remember, honestly, but I'm sure that was not put in post. If anyone can do that whistle.
Oh, yeah.
It's Patrick. So that breaks it up. And the Lambert kids storm out. And the scene buttons by Dana saying, well, this is a disaster. And Carol says, no, I still think the rules will work. And Dana says, I was talking about your marriage.
Oh,
these kids have some mean, mean lines.
I know.
Damn, Dana.
Damn.
Woo. I'm sure there's a lot of people watching this where they're like, yeah, my mom would have smacked me right in the face.
Yeah.
100%. Like I would be dead.
For sure.
And buried who knows where. But it wouldn't quite end like that. Now, Al. Oh, Al, what is going on? Al is wearing kind of a khaki / olive green short and sort of the same-ish color t-shirt.
Yeah, it just all looks like green, muted.
And a baseball hat. How did we land upon this color? I mean, it looks like you've been in the mud. I don't understand. You have this cute little girl. What is she wearing?
It's so baggy, and it's that tartan red plaid hat that makes no sense with any of the outfit. Where did that come from? We never see it again.
Oh my God. Now you mentioned, I think it was when we were covering episode one, that you lamented the abundance of overalls and the lack of, you know, being able to get your hair did and all that kind of stuff. I mean, did you feel like that from the beginning? Like kind of disappointed that the character got, you know, was this tomboy who had these blah clothes and hair?
It didn't bother me as a kid at all. Like when I was 12, 13, none of it bothered me because I was just sort of like, yeah, right. Great. She's a kid. Great. Like, I just trusted that they knew what they were doing.
Hmm.
And most of the clothes were like from the Gap. So I felt pretty like comfortable in that world.
Mm-hmm.
It was when I started to become like 13, 14, and I was sort of ready to not be wearing like the same thing over and over. And yeah. I was kind of like, come on, you guys. I feel like I'm just like, oh, and we don't know, and we'll throw her in this. You know, yeah. It was sort of just like, I got the last, like, and it'll be that same t-shirt again. And I'm like, really? With the same thing?
Yeah.
Can I be like cute? Isn't there any, when can I get be cute?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Cause imagine you have makeup people and hair people and you have customers and there's this huge, you know, all this wardrobe everywhere. And yeah, of course.
Yeah. And like literally like there was like the ultimate glamour at the top. And I feel like you were pretty, you were getting, you know, more honed in onto what you liked and who your character was. And then of course they were always glamoring Angela because she had these matching outfits. And
yes.
And then it was just like, oh, and you.
Oh God.
But you know, this is like kind of pre backwards hat. I feel like backwards hat started like second season, or maybe it'll happen middle of the first, but that became a real like trend. That's like kind of where we'll see Al for several years is in a backwards hat. And I think finally that became a thing for me too, because I felt like I outgrew it.
Yeah.
And I felt like a kid in it. And I was like, do I have to keep wearing this?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we had to have a couple of those conversations when I got older. Because I just didn't feel like it was, I don't know, I felt like it was too babyish for who that character was becoming.
Yeah. I mean, the characters have to grow with the people playing the characters. And, totally. You know, I feel like in a lot of regards, the producers did. They got to know us so well that they started incorporating our personalities as ourselves.
Definitely.
Into the characters as the years went by, because they knew us very well, and you did start to see that happen. So we'll get there eventually. We're in the kitchen now. Frank is there with his oldest, with JT, and Frank wants JT to get on board with all the rules. And he's basically, you know, saying to JT, look, you know, your younger siblings, they look up to you. So if you go along with these rules, they'll get on board with it. And JT says, we didn't have rules in our house and look how well I turned out. Again. No rules. So DCFS no rules. Is coming.
They're coming.
There's no food. The house is filthy. There's no rules.
And then he takes what this would end up being. I'm sure this was like, I can't remember who came up with this. This was like a Rich Carell thing, or if this was a Patrick Duffy thing, but he ends up taking a big jar of chocolate syrup, squirting it in his mouth, and then taking a big slug of milk straight from the carton, and then like swishing it around and then just like swallowing. And this becomes kind of a runner for his character quite a lot.
Right. So in other words, he's a slob.
And he's making chocolate milk in his mouth.
Yes. Yes, exactly. But yet he's claiming that the lack of rules has benefited him in life. So then Frank lays down the law, and he's basically saying, you need to get on board with these rules, JT, or you're not going to get those high tops that I promised you. Now, meantime, JT is wearing a high-waisted, light, stonewashed jean.
Very high-waisted.
Very high. A belt. A tucked-in t-shirt with a button front shirt over it, open, and I think high top. So again, this is more peak 90s. That was such a look. But you know, also oddly, I was looking at that going, every writer on our show was wearing that outfit.
Totally.
Adult men at the time, that is what they wore. And if you were a writer, it's like, hey, this is Hollywood. It's cool. It's casual. I can wear jeans. I can wear, you know, fancy Nike high tops and a t-shirt. And that was, I bet you, as this episode was being taped, 9 out of 10 of the writers sitting there, they were mostly men, as I recall, were wearing that look.
Yeah, definitely.
Light wash jeans do not do anybody any favors.
No.
I just want to put that out there. You can never go wrong with a dark wash jean. You just can't. In terms of it being flattering, in terms of it looking dated when you're looking back on that photo of yourself 30 years down the line, a dark wash is timeless. It is flattering for everyone.
It really is.
The light stonewashed, just please, just say no. Just say no to it. Okay.
It does hearken very mom jean. Yes. There's something about it that just throws me into like Tina Fey mom jean territory.
So next scene. So now apparently it's the morning. JT is outside of the bathroom with a stopwatch, and he is enforcing the 12-minute bathroom rule that Carol laid out in her big chart, you know, family meeting scene, where basically she said, I skipped this part, but she said every kid is going to get 12 minutes in the bathroom in the morning, which, I mean, if you think about it, If there is one bathroom or six kids, and then it seems like, oh, no, we know that Frank and Carol, have an ensuite in their room. Wow. You're going to need to schedule that. You're going to need to figure that out, because probably everyone needs to leave for school at the same time. I'm sure there are people out there who do this, but that does seem like you would have to, you couldn't just throw it to chance and hope that it would all work out.
You got a military shower, you know, you might need to brush your teeth while you're washing your hair.
In the shower. Yeah. And you have teenagers in there that are going to want to like do a look and spend time. And then,
oh, you got to do all your hair and makeup in your room.
Yeah. 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 It's going to take this. So I'm with Carol on this one. Yeah. Someone's got to figure this out. So anyway, so JT now clearly he's followed Frank's, you know, instruction. He has gotten on board with the rules, because here he is actually being the enforcer, because he wants the high tops, basically, that Frank has kind of bribed him with. So then he's, you know, demanding. Karen is inside the bathroom. She comes out. She is pissed. She's wearing rollers.
She's got the cold cream facial.
The big green facial mask. On her face. Yes. And she calls JT an insect. And she storms off.
Her look was very funny when she comes out. She like gives him this like really feral kind of like, you're an insect.
You're an insect. And she storms off with her robe a flapping. So now we go to the next scene. And here we're in the girl's bedroom.
We're not often in the girl's bedroom. A couple times. There's a couple different moments in this bedroom. As I recall, wasn't there a scene that got cut from the pilot? I'm just remembering this now, where Al is like unpacking some of her stuff, and one of the things that she like shows Dana is some kind of snake head in a jar.
That sounds right.
Do you remember this?
Vaguely.
I think there was some kind of scene where she was kind of, I don't know, they were all sort of pissing on each other's territory. And then, of course, Al like is like, really? Well, it's a snake head in a jar. You know, they never lose their venom. Like she gives her some kind of like threatening sort of like, voodoo, I'm going to kill you in your sleep.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
And that just came to me. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Well, this bedroom is very pink. It is very pastel and floral. It's kind of giving Laura Ashley vibes.
Yes.
Some of you out there may not remember Laura Ashley, but oh my God, Laura Ashley was
the patterned, the person of the times.
Yes. It was kind of a lifestyle brand.
For sure.
If you will, of the 80s, I would say, where you could get a rather expensive floral patterned dress with like a lacy collar down to your ankles.
Yes.
For not cheap. I mean, this stuff was not cheap. It was expensive. And people loved it. It was very popular. So you would wear like a granny boot.
Yep.
With this prairie dress, this, you know, floral prairie dress. And then of course she came out with home decor items. So you could get a whole Laura Ashley bedroom. You could get
had it.
No, you didn't.
I did. Ah! I had the sheets. I had the dust ruffle. I had the comforter. I had the shams. And I also had the decorative pillow.
You are kidding.
No, in my real life.
What was
the
pattern like?
It was very similar to what's in the show.
So this
kind
of pink and blue, pale pastel.
Yes, it was blue. There was a stripe underneath it. And then it had large patterned flowers, pink and blue flowers on top.
That was a classic where you would have a broad stripe in basic colors like blue and white. And then you would have like pink and blue and white, huge roses on top of that stripe.
And it was so funny because like, I think Al, again, made some comment when she walked in, like, ugh, looks like Laura Ashley exploded in here. And I think it was a line that got cut. But in my real life, that was my bedroom.
I'm so jealous. Okay. So we had friends. When we were still living in Pennsylvania, very wealthy family, and the one daughter had the whole bedroom.
Oh yeah.
The wallpaper.
Oh wow.
She had a swing in her room, one of those ones that it hangs from a chain, and it's like a little cocoon swinging wicker thing with like the cushion inside, and you go in there. And then she had all the Laura Ashley. Oh my God. And I saw her room and I was like, oh, just like turned inside out. I was so jealous.
It was pretty, but the funny thing was my parents kept my room the same for so long. So when I left for college, they just never really did anything to it.
Yeah.
So cut 2 years later, I'm Brandon and I are engaged and I'm now in my 30s. I get back, we're coming back for Christmas or something, and we're obviously sleeping in my childhood bedroom with the Laura Ashley sheets. I have a picture of Brandon asleep, like curled up, and he's just like curled up in the Laura Ashley. And I'm like, this is not to be believed. I said to my mom, Mom, I think it's time. I think it's time we retire
time
this.
To let go.
I cannot Laura watch Ashley. My future husband sleep in these sheets.
Oh my God. Oh, just it's not so okay. Great. I wonder if the brand is still out there. I mean, I'm sure you can buy like the clothes and stuff on eBay.
Oh yeah, I would think so.
Okay. Anyway, so Al comes into the room, into the girls' room. So now we have three of these girls, two teenagers and one almost teenager in the room. Now it's a good sized room, but still. Al walks in, she takes off her like sweatshirt or whatever and just kind of tosses it on the dresser. Karen is like, ugh, like, are you going to hang that up? And Al is not going to fit in with this, you know, prissy, uptight environment very clearly. So Al's like, no, you know, basically defiant. So here's what Al is walking into. She's walking into Chelsea Clinton and, you know, Delta Burke
right.
in their, you know, fussy, floofy room. We know things are going south. And guess what? That's what happens. Because Al plunks down into the, like, wicker rocking chair with pastel sham on top. And she's going to watch the game. Now, Karen is like, but you can't. It's homework time. You can't watch TV during homework time. So Dana's not the only uptight in the house. And get it? So then Al gets mad. Al has a full meltdown.
This is a full psychotic break.
This is like the movie Sybil.
Yes.
With Sally Fields.
Field.
All
of a sudden, Al just starts being... She just becomes unhinged. She is like throwing books.
She's taking books that are just here and there about the room and throwing them onto the ground. But then she escalates into a full blown Incredible Hulk's
a shelf
or like what's the Godzilla's like a shelf's worth of books onto the floor. And it's just like, well,
it's such a weird scene because we're having this like standoff and then she's just like, you know, what's wrong with you? And she's like, I don't know, these walls, this room, like
the rules. And then Dana's like, hey, look, you know, we all hate the rules, but if you're going to live here, you have to live by them. So that's how Dana kind of ends this meltdown is she just like steps up and is like, knock it off. You know, you're going to have to live by the rules if you're going to live here. And then Al goes, great. Well, then I'm not going to live here.
Dun, and she dun, dun.
Pulls out a suitcase and she starts packing a suitcase. And then
for like a runaway.
Yes. Then there's sad music.
Mm-hmm.
Because Al is going to end up like selling herself in a bus station in the Port Authority in New York.
Totally.
Or something like this is not, it's not going anywhere good.
She's like going to go outside and wait for a taxi, like for real.
Yes. Actually, before we go on to our next scene, why don't we take a break?
Yes, we'll take a break and we'll be right back and finish up episode 3. Deja vu.
Okay, so now we're into the next scene. Frank wants to watch the World Series, but he is out of these TV tickets that Carol has prescribed to manage everyone's television time. So Carol, of course, does not want him to just throw on the TV and start watching the World Series without an appropriate ticket to buy his time.
What kind of example would that leave for little Brendan, who is behind the couch?
Exactly. Carol says, you know, to Frank, you know, you don't want to set a bad example. So now Frank goes about trying to essentially procure TV tickets from various kids who happen by. So first he hits up little Brendan, adorable little cherubic Brendan. And Brendan will not give up his ticket because he wants to watch Dumbo. Which is very sweet.
So cute.
Then Karen rolls in and she's like, oh, okay, I think I have some in my purse. And then she does this kind of purse inventory and she starts pulling out an eyeliner, a lipstick, a nail polish. Oh, look, Misty Plum. I was wondering where I put that. And Frank is freaking out because time is ticking. The World Series is on and he's missing it as Karen is, you know, inventorying this bag. So finally, Mark rolls in. Of course, always entrepreneurial, Mark manages to sell Frank a TV ticket at a premium premium because, of course, it's the World Series. So he sells Frank a ticket for $5. So at this point, Frank, now that he has a ticket, he has, you know, it's official. He has the imprimatur. He can turn on the TV. He turns it on and the World Series is ending. It is the it is the announcer being like, well, that was this year's World Series, folks. See you later.
We've never seen anything like it.
Right. So Frank has missed it. So at this point, Frank asks to see Carol in the kitchen and says to her, essentially, the rules are too much. You are driving everybody crazy. And then Frank goes, I just had to buy a ticket to watch the World Series from a scalper who's your son, which I thought was a funny line. And then Carol says, you know, these kids, they needed boundaries, which to me, it kind of strikes me as sort of an early use of that word. Yeah. I feel like boundaries is a big word now that it gets used. But in the 90s, was that a big word?
I don't know.
Feels a little bit ahead of its time. You know, they needed boundaries. Look at JT. He's embracing the rules. So at this point, Frank reveals that he actually bribed JT with high tops. So JT has not been embracing the rules. Sorry to tell you, Carol. It was all about high tops for him, that he needed to get on board and set an example for the other kids if he wanted those shoes. So now Dana rolls in and announces that, hey, Al is moving out. Al, who is like the size of a June bug, has packed a suitcase that is bigger than her and is moving out. And now Carol feels bad because, you know, she instituted these rules.
She's maybe gone overboard with these things.
Yeah, kind of incited a rebellion. So now Carol is going to go talk to Al, who is currently on the front porch awaiting a cab, which I... there's no cell phones. So did Al like get out the phone book?
I think Al straight up, yes. I think she got out the phone
book. The yellow pages.
And she was like, forget it. And she just straight up called a cab and was like,
yes, she got the yellow pages. She went through it. There's all those big ads. Some of you listening to this do not know what I'm talking about, but get this. There used to be this big book. Really big.
Before the internet.
And really heavy. And it would show up in your driveway once a year. And if you wanted to look up a business in your town, such as a taxi company, you would flip through these little, very thin paper pages, little vellum pages. And, well, not quite vellum, but very thin paper. And, you know, some of these companies, there would be a full page ad, for AAA, you know, all the companies had to have as many A's as possible in their name. So they'd be first in the listing or in the listing. So it would be, quadruple A cab company or whatever.
Little history lesson for you kids out there.
But anyway. Not only that, but residential numbers too.
You had the white pages. Yes. So you could look up Mr. and Mrs. Bill Hutton.
And sometimes you would be doing that.
Yes.
Like, there would be people in your neighborhood, and you'd be like, oh, I want to, you know, have a play date with so-and-so. And they'd be like, well, my dad was like, well, look him up in the white pages. I'm like, huh? Yes. Okay.
Yes, yes, yes. So somehow, listen, Al is very resourceful.
Listen, she, as we learned in episode one, she had to make it on her own while her dad was in Jamaica. I think calling a cab is the least of her street smarts at this point.
Look, I mean, we saw that on day one, apparently, of Frank living in the house with his kids, he just boned out.
And full squalor.
It was Carol. Well, just in terms of when he moved into Carol's house, it was immediately Carol's job to get the kids to school and whatever.
Yep.
So for all we know, Al has been cabbing it about town for years. I mean, she's just an old hat. Like, she lit a cigarette. She
totally
located the yellow pages in Carol's house. She called up, you know, Fred, her favorite dispatcher over there. You know, send Oscar if he's available, will you? So she's waiting on the front porch. Al is now for a cab to come, of course. So now we go to the porch and Al advises Carol, who has gone to talk to Al to try to reason with her, that Al is going to go live with her grandma in Milwaukee, in one of those old people trailer parks.
This is the only time we hear about this grandmother, FYI.
And I'm sorry, are old people trailer parks a thing?
I don't know.
I was thinking, are they there against their will? Has the government quarantined them in some way? I don't understand. They're an old person trailer park.
Right.
Is that by choice? I don't know, but I was confused. So Al starts crying. Carol is comforting Al, and saying, if you leave, it will break your dad's heart and mine too, which is sweet. So Al says, I feel like I can't do anything right. And Carol says, I feel that way too. And so they come together in this moment. And Carol goes on to explain, she thought the rules would bring everybody together. And then Al, just being kind of straight up, says, look, some of them are dumb. Some of these rules are dumb. And then Carol says, I can't tell which ones. And Al says that she can show her, you know, basically, where has Carol gone overboard with the rules and where are the rules? Just good, necessary structure if you have six school-aged kids living in one house. So they reach this, you know, they come
once
to
again,
they reach this like, understanding. Bond. Yes, they're going to help each other out here. So they're going to work together to find balance with this whole rule system. So Al feels better. And then Carol takes Al and her suitcase back inside the house. And Al is not moving out after all. So Carol has saved the day by reaching out to Al. And yes, once again, making that
Meanwhile,
connection.
What was Frank doing?
Whipping a bowl somewhere inside the house. I don't know. He's like, listen, lady, you got six kids now. See you at college graduation, right. I guess.
Totally. I think he did say something like, I'll go talk to her. And she's like, no. She's out there because of me. I'll go deal with it. I mean, I think she said something probably of that effect. But yeah.
Yeah, but this is the second episode now of the entire series and the second so far where Carol has been trying to extend an olive branch to Al and onboard Al.
Yeah. There's a lot going on between them, the two of them.
Yes. So now we go to the next scene. We're in the kitchen and the Foster family's waiting for the Lamberts to arrive. And once again, there's a very nice table that's set. I noticed a different set of dishes. I thought, wow, these folks are kind of fancy. There was a flower dish on the first time they were all sitting there waiting. And this time it was a very shiny blue set. Just thought, how many sets of dishes does this woman own?
So this is props getting fancy with it.
Yeah. So they're all sitting there. And the consensus is the Lamberts are never going to make it on time for dinner right at 6:30. It's just not going to happen. They're not capable of this. And then at the very last second, literally the last second, because Dana is staring at her watch, counting down the actual seconds to 6:30 on the dot, Frank and his kids all suddenly come running in from every direction. And lo and behold, they're complying with Carol's dream, this concept of this structured family dinner where everyone sits down together. But then Al comes in, mentioning that the space shuttle launch is on TV and floating the idea that everyone could watch the shuttle landing together on TV during dinner. So this would kibosh immediately then Carol's nice dinner with everyone at the table together. And it also probably breaks the rule about TV time and tickets and that whole system. So Carol is reluctant, but she is trying to change. She is trying to meet the Lamberts where they are, if you will. So finally, she says, okay. So the kids are pumped and they start grabbing food and they start filling up their plates and they all start running into the living room. And Carol is yelling after them about do not get food on the furniture. The two of them are left there. And so Frank says to Carol, when you break a rule, it turns me on. And Carol is happy and they start making out.
I mean, obvi. The thing I love about when you actually look step by step up, you know, on like a platform, say like IMDb or, you know, a database that has to do with film and television, it says comedy, family, romance. That's the other moniker that labels this show, which I just think is so hilarious.
Oh, I've never noticed that.
I mean, my daughter would concur.
So once again, it turns out this is a horny show. So one final thought, you know, thinking about it, we discussed at length that pink dress that Carol wears during the laying down the rules scene. And I thought, you know, that had to be a really purposeful choice, you know, because it's a fun dress in a really bright color. She had to look fun. I mean, if she looked like an old school marm, this is only the second episode. Her character has to be likable.
Right.
And even though she's playing the kind of bad cop or the heavy in this odd couple relationship with Frank, who's easy breezy and, you know, no rules and everything's, you know, just kind of off the cuff, you have to dress her in a fun pink dress.
Totally.
Like that.
Even though this is technically the third episode that aired, it was the second one we shot. So when when you think about like them trying to, you know, once again, sort of show the audience who these characters are in these different, you know, roles. It probably, I bet you there was some kind of note about her not coming off as unlikable during this moment.
Yes.
Likeability was such a big key phrase and still is in the entertainment industry. When you hire somebody and you're the character description as an actor, you read these descriptions of, you know, Jane, 30s, likable. I mean, even people who have major character flaws, they still want you to be likable. And that's why I think one of the hardest things to like emote, you can't just emote likability. It's, and even when the character is written as a total B, you still have to be likable. And yeah. I mean, it's one of those sort of like overall notes, I think, that a network gives.
Yeah, that's true. And it has to be in the writing.
Yes.
But of course, you have to play it that way too. And that was another thing. The way Suzanne Summers played that scene, she, you know, she literally has a pointer in her hand.
Right.
So, but she had to sell it like, hey, everybody, isn't this such a great, fun idea? Which is how she played it.
Right.
She didn't
totally
play it like, okay, I'm laying down the rules.
No. And it was very like, it was very much into her like type A personality.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to guess that was your favorite outfit of the episode.
Yeah. So we are about to get there. Okay, so now this is the time where we ask ourselves, who had the best hair of the episode?
Okay, well, you're not going to believe this, but I'm going to go with you.
What?
Yeah.
What? When was that?
The scene where Al has her freak out.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you made a huge leap. All of a sudden, your hair was like very voluminous. It had come out of whatever kind of, you know, Hamilton-esque low ponies. It was.
Hamilton-esque?
You know, with the floppy bows, like it was very like turn of the century.
Like founding fathers?
Founding fathers. And it just, it was voluminous. It was like really.
Oh my God.
Very, you went from Hamilton to Christie Brinkley. Like I was like, whoa, what happened? So I'm 100% giving you best hair of the episode.
Wow. Well, Oh my gosh. I'm blushing. I'm so thrilled. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. It feels good.
Hamilton-esque. And luckily, I'm as pale as some of the founding fathers as well. Some of that, the powder from those wigs.
The last couple episodes, they just did some. I mean, it was really giving me like, you know, 1790s vibes.
Oh my gosh, that is hilarious. Okay.
Well, this has been a great one. Thank you, everyone, for listening. On our next episode, we are going to be running down season one, episode 4, entitled The First Anniversary. Thanks for listening. I'm Christine Lakin.
And I'm Stacey Keenan.
And we hope we've given you deja vu. Until next time. Thanks for listening. Be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. You can write us at keenanandlakin@gmail.com and follow us on social at Keenan and Lakin. Big shout out to our producer and editor, Stephen Ray Morris. We love you dearly. For the horse to depart.
Whose horse is that?
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.